Mark?
Yep.
Hey, we've got a couple of extra questions here for you. We usually put those into our newsletter. Is that okay
sure,
if we keep recording?
Sure.
I think Kurt Kimmel's got a question for you.
Okay.
Mark, help me out here. I've been bullish this hog and cattle complex probably a little too early here on this liquidation. How high you think the meat complex can go 2-3 years down the road here if we do get this liquidation?
You know, long term, I am incredibly bullish protein and food. You know, the question is going to be, what is this new administration going to do to, you know, I was at a conference on Tuesday where a very bright guy from Washington was saying literally that food is going to be the enemy to the Obama administration, meaning that they're going to look at putting on all kinds of safety precautions, all kinds of regulations, and anything that goes through the chain is going to be, you know, subject to all this new regulation. But bottom line to your question is, I look at inflation, I look at the money supply, I look at what's happening in the world and this liquidation, and those people that want to eat either pork or beef are going to have to pay up for it because the numbers aren't going to be there. And how high can it go? Well, if you can have $25 wheat, why can't you have $120 cattle? Why can't you have $110 hogs? I don't know why. Because if people, when, you know, the bottom line is, are people going to run the grain through the animals, or do they want the meat? They want the meat. At least in America, we want the meat, and there are plenty of people around that can still afford to pay it. If they can pay $5 for gas, they can pay, you know, pick a number for cattle and hog prices. So, you know, I agree with you. It's just, how bad can it get first? And, you know, maybe we need to see that flush in the cattle down to, who knows?
And you mentioned inflation, Mark. I mean, is that not one of the positives for grain prices somewhere down the road? I mean, if we make some of these lows and we go down, the crop's bigger, whatever it may be,
yeah,
somewhere out there that's got to affect the corn and bean price, too.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, what's going to be maybe that impetus is we start rebuilding some of these herds, inflation comes back in, and maybe more importantly is the dollar, in my opinion, collapses. You know, I think 78 cents for the dollar is nuts. It ought to be 60 cents, and I think that's where it's going. And that ultimately is going to be very bullish to the grains. It's going to be bullish to the livestock. But we've got maybe one more shakeout coming, and then I just think you got to look at long-term strategies to try to own value.
It makes it very difficult for the producer, though, to have a game plan because, you know, you got to sell where you can make money. But in the back of your mind, again, I would agree with you, somewhere out there, when this kicks in, you know, you could be caught on the wrong side of the market. So I think re-ownership at low prices is always probably a wise thing to do as we go through the next, whatever it may be, 6, 8, 9 months.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, one of the problems we're going to see, you know, people don't realize that one of the jobs of the market is to force out inefficient producers. And the guys that paid $1,000 for anhydrous and they paid, you know, $400 and $500 for cash rents, and now they're selling their crops at $3 corn and, who knows, maybe $7 beans, they aren't going to make it. And those farms are going to go into stronger hands ultimately. We're going to force out more of the little guys that don't use the risk management tools. And when you get the grains and the livestock in stronger hands, that's a case for the markets to go up as well.
Well, I wonder about that. I mean,
okay.
I think we might retire a lot of little guys. I thought force out might be more. That sounds a little too 80-ish to me. Retire might be a better term of it.
What have you done to these guys in the dairy? They're gone.
Yes and no, because they're gone, but they're gone for a reason. They got a buyout. They all got together, CWT. They bought 100,000 head, and they turned around and they bought another 100,000 head of dairy cattle. They got out because in California they got pushed out, I would agree. But they also sold out because CWT bought them. In the livestock industry, on the hog side, if you look at the numbers, I think you'll find that what you're suggesting is that they are pushing those guys out. But when, for instance, Tyson said they were going to push 70,000 out the door. They were going to shut 70,000 down. That was probably their inefficient producer. And now you've got hog sows out there that are running probably 12, maybe more, a litter.
Mm-hmm.
The Danes are up around 15. I think the last time I talked to somebody who was a Smithfield producer, he was turning hogs at 25 a year on the numbers. And though the hog numbers don't look to him like they were going down, Chris Hurt says they're not going down in total. I think that probably does that not give you, I guess my question again is, and I know you said you don't micromanage it this way, but if you look at the dairy industry, you're going to have fewer dairy animals, no doubt. How much are they? I don't know how much the dairy industry consumes in the way of corn. I don't know what the beef compared to, to the poultry and the pork. So I just don't have a handle on that number. But I wonder if the dire straits you're talking about in the land, in the row crop farmer is actually there.
You know, I believe it is, because when I talk to, it seems to me, and has been the pattern for 50 years, the bigger guys are getting bigger, the smaller guys who don't do the risk management are just, they get fed up with it, they can't make a living, somebody offers them, you know, a good price to cash rent, and they're gone. And, you know, the land's going to still be there, but it's going to shift into different hands. And again, I think that's part of the efficiency of the market, is to weed out those guys that will do the risk management and spend just a fraction of the time on the risk management side that they do on the production side.
Right.
And why would things change now? I don't see that. What I see is, when I go to these meetings all over the country, how many of you guys spend an hour a week on risk management? Maybe 3% of the hands will go up. And that's frightening to me.
Well, the decisions are getting difficult and more important to the bottom line. As you mentioned, if you purchased your inputs at a high price last year, you darn well had better had sold the corn. So those decisions are difficult, and there's more swings in the market. Like I say, I mean, if you have to try to manage those, and it's not an easy job, but I think, again, the commitment of time to doing that is more important than ever. And shows like this and being able to implement some strategies is where a lot of guys struggle. They listen to a lot of shows, a lot of information, but it's pulling the trigger that's the hard part.
And, you know, that's one of the things I try to go around the country and preach, is that pulling the trigger is probably the most crucial part of what it is you do out there. And, you know, last year, in 2008, our clients were 100% sold on their 08 crops by July 31st. They were 50, if they had RA and CRC, they were 50% sold on the 09 crops by then. Now, how did we get guys to pull the trigger? We said, listen, go sell 675 09 corn. Buy a $7 call for 50 cents, and let's see where we go. If we're on our way to $10 corn, great. If corn's back on its way back to $3, you're going to love those sales. And it's the guys that had the guts to pull the trigger and buy the call. And we always explain to them, listen, the odds of this call paying off are about zero. But it's worth every penny of that 50 cents if it gives you the confidence to pull the trigger on 675 corn sales.
Mark, where are you at today with your yield estimates on corn and beans, and what would you think we'd be at, say, a month from now if weather continues to cooperate?
Well, I think the USDA is high on both. Now, I say that because I'm privy to some private stuff that's not out by anybody, and I can't really tell you what those numbers are, but I think the USDA is high. Now, that flies in the face. These reports I'm getting fly in the face of everything I know about production this time of year with this kind of weather. You know, I look at it and say, these yields are going to be through the roof. 2 years ago, some friends of mine at Monsanto were telling me that we are going to, within 2 years, see the yields on beans take the jump that corn's been taking, you know, over the last several years. And this is the second year. So could we see that bump in the yields by 2 bushels? Wouldn't surprise me. But my best information is telling me something just opposite from that. So I don't know, do I believe my gut or do I believe the experts? You know, flip a coin, guys. I wish I could tell you.
Also, too, what's your opinion in the Dow? Is the Dow going to keep going here?
I think the Dow is the greatest hot air balloon floating in the country today. I'm sure you guys have seen this email floating around. About 70% of the volume is by these high-frequency programs. And, you know, they pumped this thing up. You know, we've added almost 50% of the value since the lows on nothing. I don't see anything any better or any worse than it was 6 months ago. They want to say that this recession is over, we're coming out of it. Well, let them walk down Main Street and see all the shops that are still closed. I don't see anybody renting these spaces. Foreclosures picking up in record levels. You know, maybe home sales are increasing a little bit, but they're how cheap can they get? And the foreclosures keep coming. So I think we have just built a balloon here. When we start paying for these programs, you know, the money that's going to get printed and the inflation, I just don't see that the economy is as sound as the administration would like us to believe.
Part of the reason we got the bean market where it was, people forget or guys don't talk about much, is because of the terrible problem in South America. So, you know, what if they come online again and have a fairly decent crop? Aren't we right back to that two big crops in the world? And isn't that not another negative to the bean market coming down the road?
Yeah, if you believe that the Brazilians are actually going to get it in. My partner has an office down in Brazil, and there's still a lot of question about actually what's going to get planted down there. And, you know, the USDA, I think, has 60 or 61 budgeted in for Brazil, if I remember right. Does that sound right, guys? And that may be optimistic. But at any rate, if they have a big crop, yeah, that'll be more pressure. You know, I still look at 50 million metric tons of carryout around the world. It's a lot of beans. You know, the only tightness we have is right here for the next month or so. And if today's any indication, that broke the back of these old crop, new crop spreads. So, you know, to me, the beans are a float out there and have $2 of cushion in them that could come out here in a heartbeat.
Mark, what was the reasons for the question on acres? Was it financing or was there anything specific that's on their minds there?
Yeah, the financing was a big part of it. The input costs, just the whole, they're not getting the returns that they'd like to. And there's still a lot of infrastructure problems down there. It's a different world down there than what we're used to. And things don't go as smoothly as we'd like to see them. And, you know, I think everybody, a lot of people up north seem to think that there's a lot of slam dunks down there. There aren't that many slam dunks down there. Yes, if they get the weather, they can grow some big crops. But it's not quite as easy as everybody would make it.
Mark, I know you're not a weather expert. None of us are. But this is the second year in a row we're going to try and talk up a frost issue. Is that something that's going to play in the trade's mind? Or are they going to ignore it just like, I mean, we got worried about it last year, but it turned out to be nothing.
You know, generally, whenever we worry about a problem, that's not the one that hurts us. You know, we worried about Asian rust years ago after the Brazilians got hit. Everybody was prepared for it. Never hit. Generally, the things you worry about don't come to fruition. It's the things that you don't even think about or even on the radar that come up and bite you. So I would say the odds. And with this El Nino patterns that we're seeing right now, it's indicative of there's only a 1 out of 3 chance of a frost. So the odds aren't really very good. And everybody's worried about it, which probably tells me it's not going to happen.
Yeah. What about the hogs? I don't know if you study the hogs much. You think this is the bottom, or do we have more to go to find a downside in the hog market yet?
You know, we got the bellies down to $39, 39 and change today. That's the lowest price of the millennium, the lowest price of the century. We haven't traded this low since 1999. So, you know, I suppose you wouldn't ought to be thinking about buying millennia. If I'm willing to buy 20-year lows, I ought to be willing to buy millennium lows. But, you know, there could be another $6 or $8 of risk in the bellies. There could be another $6 to $8 risk in the live hogs or in the lean hogs. So I think it's just a little bit early yet. maybe once we get through the first of the year, you know, we're going to have all this swine flu and the kids going back to school, and every 6 o'clock news broadcaster keeps saying swine flu. You know, I tried to get a little push together, you know, 6 weeks ago saying, you know, let's all get together and not call this thing swine flu. Let's call it H1N1. Let's have the president on TV eating a pork roast and, you know, try to change some of the perceptions out there.
And a beer.
Beer and a pork burger.
I can tell you that on that one, I have good enough contacts with inside the industry that I managed to talk to the people that make some of the decisions, and they're simply, the BBC won't move. I didn't talk to them. NPR will not move, and I desperately explained it to them early in the spring and said, you cannot do this. Here are the numbers from the ag economist at Purdue, and that they're just not willing to do it. I can't even convince the news team here on the radio station, because the BBC, the AP, I don't remember about the AP, but the BBC and NPR finally came around that they'll use H1N1 first, but they always followed up with swine flu.
Yeah, and, you know, to me it's, you know, it's how to sell newspapers and how to make ratings.
The thing is, I don't know whether, I mean, the first time around I think it had an impact. I would wonder whether it will have that much of an impact the second time around. It might.
You know, I think as these kids start getting sick in the schools, and, you know, if it breaks out of just the affecting the young kids and the old folks and it gets into the general population, you know, I think people are going to look at that piece of pork, raw pork, on the counter and go, better not.
Hey, I've got one other question, because I generally do not quote the pork bellies on the air.
Yeah.
And I made note for the first, I just happened to look at them and made note for the very first time, there is a huge difference between the August and the February contract. August settled at $40. February, my eyes aren't that good. It's either 78 or 79, one of the two. What's the difference there?
Well, the difference is everybody thinks that storing the bellies isn't going to pay, and that they want more money to store bellies over the winter here. We've seen that spread go to 40 cents before, but let's say we got September, October, November, December, January, February, you got 6 months. Can you store those bellies for 6 months for 40 cents? Most people would say you can't, so you buy the cash, you buy the August bellies, take delivery, and hedge them off in the feds. Can you make money at that? I don't know. What are your storage costs? But it doesn't necessarily mean that you're not going to take some heat in the meantime. But I would, you know, I can't imagine. I haven't done the math because, frankly, I don't care, but.
Note that I don't read them on the air. Yeah.
Do I want to get in the game of storing bellies? And, you know, I go way back to, you know, the early 70s at the Merck when I was a runner. And I used to watch the game, you know, as Harold Heinholt would play with the bellies and Harold Schneider and some of these other guys. And they all played the games. And, you know, you look at the volume and anybody who plays, I always say, if you're intent on playing the bellies, forget about it. Go to Vegas. At least they'll buy you a drink while you're playing.
They let you park for free.
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, I'm sure you could call any good hog guy and say, you know, what does it cost to carry bellies? But the spread hasn't come in. So none of the pros are rushing to do this. I think they're chomping at the bit for guys like you and me to say, hey, we got a 40-cent spread there. Is it going to cost you 40 cents to store bellies? Well, the spreads haven't come in. So now, when the August went off the board last time, they had that big break, just like they're doing now, and then they rallied about $12 off of that. So, you know, maybe it's getting time to try that. But, you know, the last thing I want to do is worry about belly margin calls.
I've got some tomatoes for you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much, Mark. We appreciate
guys,
sticking with us.
Take care. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.